ました。エリシアキャンチ。
Hi, I'm Neil, and welcome to the Crosscast. In today's Crosstalk, we are going to look back on the end of the season with the final races that wrapped up the DBV and the Super Prestige Series. And being the last show of the season, we're going to look back on the year and if anyone's had a standout performance. We are also going to look forward to next season, and we are going to be able to reveal to you the schedule for the National Trophy and the National Champs for next year. Now, it seems like it was ages ago since we actually last talked. We had Nicky Bramier in the studio, and for various reasons, I had an epic editing challenge with all those interviews. But, you know, looking back on the whole season, Bruce, anything that you're going to remember the 2019-2020 season for?
Well, it might not have been completely the deluge on the continent, but it certainly felt like a wet season here in the UK. And for me, I think one of the overwhelming things was last year felt like a dry year, and this year has been biblically rainy and muddy. I don't know whether you've managed to dry out yet, Matt, but I've still got items I'm just trying to get through and clean and wash and put away.
Well, I definitely agree with you on the muddy season. I went up to Rjukan Glen, up to the Albanac race for the final race of the season that I was actually on the mic for. And it ran through to form. It was gales, it was raining, it was muddy. And I was kind of driving back down from Glasgow thinking, what would I think of the season? How could I sum up the season? And actually, I thought it was the year that Cross became more rounded, where the women's side of the sport dominated almost the men's side of the sport and was generally regarded as being balanced and equal. And I thought the men's side pulled its socks up as well. So overall, I thought it was a very balanced Cross season. And if we continued in this vein, it wouldn't be a bad thing for the next few years.
Yeah, maybe. We know that's not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, you know, I'm going to take away from this season, you know, the one race I'm going to take away, not because it was the best race of the season, but it was the Junior Women's World Champs. You know, it was that move on, and you know, as we've mentioned many times, you know, having family out and doing that season racing in Belgium, I think for me that's what's going to. I'm going to remember the season four. I think it's been at that end, that development end.
I thought it was going to be for a favourite, you know, year of the cable cam, Neil, seeing as how there's been such a proliferation of them.
I think it's only one.
No. There's been more. You're slipping. I've been watching out for them. I spent half the time watching cable cameras and not the racing.
It's the same camera, but I just think it moves with the venues.
I mean, I think I even spotted one from the weekend, if I dare say. Just, you know, maybe that production company just has to build the course. I think it's a really interesting thing about the cable cam sort of thing and the way courses are built, because I do want to bring this slightly round to the final race of the season, which Neil will come round to talk to. But yeah, I think the course design seems to be getting more and more out there. Is it fair to say as well? I think we seem to have had more and more extravagant or interesting course features. At what point we're going to stop, I don't know. But certainly.
Any course designer these days worth their salt has got a cable cam and a JCB, it seems, isn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It seems to be one of those ones where, you know, it's basically if you haven't got some obstacle which requires riders to basically stack it for the first time on practice, then you're probably not trying hard enough. So, but, you know, maybe next year will be even more exciting. Who knows?
Well, I must admit, I did float past Neil the... could we have the award for the worst copy of a great course part of design? And he said no. But I can think of lots of things where people are doing copies and it's terrible. It's just like, no, don't do it.
I didn't say no. I said the show would be far too long if we were looking for that.
Well,
but let's look at some rating. We had the final round of the DBV trophy, which came from Lille. And we saw, it can only be a really popular win, I think, for Wout van Aert. His first since Pontchâteau over a year ago. He was followed over the line by Quentin Hermans and Tounets. and Ceylan del Carmen Alvarado kept up her sprint form to beat and reversed with the junior world champion Shirin Van Anrooy finishing in third. So that means that the final standings in the DVV are Alvarado versus Castellane in 1-2-3 and Isabeth Vatourneau and Mathieu van der Poel. Alvarado, though, she's, you know, I mean, it's a cliche in the road, isn't it, of sprinters sprint on confidence. I think she's proved it in cross as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was a change mid-season. I've loved watching that development of being the person when you would bet against in the sprint and the person now that you wouldn't want to bet against, because she's amazing. She's absolutely come of age, and what a transformation. I mean, she was showing promise, and we were saying on the crosscast that we thought she was going to be there, that she was the rider that was up and coming last year and in the shows before and the year before. But her riding is so, so strong. And at 22, she's still got the world in front of her. She's got lots of racing to do. For me, though, that the ride of that day was definitely Van Anrooy, you know, 18 years old and racing into third place. What a ride. I mean, I thought she looked the part. She raced the part. She was definitely flagging up that she's going to be there next year, I think.
And she's signed, hasn't she? She signed for someone help me out here.
Experza,
that's right.
Yes.
So that sort of will help her development, no doubt, going forwards, which is good to see from someone who's obviously really improved this year and you know, been in there with those under-23 junior category races. Really impressive.
Yeah. The other ride there were so many good rides actually at that race. I love this end of the season stuff. Every year you got people who this is their last chance, there are things that they really want to make their mark on. But I think it meant a lot, this one, to Wout van Aert. I think I might have even tipped him for this race at the last show.
Yeah.
You know, that it was. I think we were going to see him take a win. He was kind of almost ready. And as other riders, to be fair, you know, other riders weren't there. Mathieu van der Poel wasn't there. But, you know, other riders weren't taking the start line. But, you know, you can't take anything away. That was an absolutely amazing ride. And it looked like he was back to his form.
It did. He looked like Boutvold, as you say, we've seen him progress through the season as he's come back and he started riding, and he has come in at the end. He does have that advantage. He's not raced a full season, but as Tom Pickup put it, you know, it's the rest of the world. There's Mathieu van der Poel, and Tom Pickup was the second best rider at the World Champs, or the first best non-Mathieu van der Poel, and you know, well, put in a great ride, and you look at his winning margin in the end. I think it's 25 seconds at the end of it, or similar, or something like that. 21 seconds. I thought that was a really good ride. I thought it was, you know, he looked good. He was riding strong. Quinton Hermes had a great ride as well. But for me, it was interesting that we saw Tom Pidcock racing just inside that top 10, clearly settling into that elite level of race and riding in amongst what is now, he must consider, his peers.
Yeah, and yeah, I think him riding in that group, yeah, we've seen him, you know, got to remember, in the Worlds, you know, Tom Pidcock beat every single one of the Belgians this year. No, you can't overlook that. He's way up there. He's obviously on clear form and enjoying himself at the end of the season, I think. But Quinton Hermans, you mentioned, I thought he had a really brave ride. I had a lot of respect for him in that ride, because he was in that, you know, 1-2 position. He clearly had the form. It was, in some ways, it was, you know, I mean, you make your own luck with mechanicals, but you know, in this case, he had that mechanical. He was lucky that it seemed that his gears failed in the middle of the block. Okay, so he could still actually ride the bike in pretty much everywhere. But he dropped back to that chasing group. But then he didn't just sit in and wait. He then went for it again. It was like, okay, well, you've got ahead of me now. I'm going to come back for you. I'm going to chase you. I'm going to give it a go again. And he made a pretty good job of it, I thought.
Yeah, I'm liking the fact that it seems to me that people are prepared to have a go. You know, there was a time when if Wout had gone down the road, you'd have thought, yeah, it's game over. But people are prepared to have a pop. There's, you know, whether it's because there's more, because it's the end of the season, like you say, it's last chance saloon, or whether it's just because they're realizing that people are human too and they can actually, they can take them on. And even, you know, people are still prepared to have a go at Vanderpool. They just don't get very long to do it because after the first few hundred metres, he's gone. So, no, I think I'm in two minds about the end of the season, really. Kind of, it's a bit of an anticlimax after the Worlds, and it's a bit, yeah, another race, what, another one? We've already had hundreds. But actually, the racing, I think, is very good, and it's really interesting to see who's held the form, who's come in and got some fresh legs.
You can sort of tell, some people are completely, like, not bothered at all. I mean, we're going to go on and talk about Leuven in a minute, but, you know, some riders are really, they're really, really going for it, aren't they? And you saw that, and you're fine up there. And obviously, you know, when you see the passion and the kind of how much it meant to Wout for that win, but then you contrast that with another rider that I saw at Leuven a few weeks later, which was Sweek. Now, obviously, Neil, you love last week, and he's an amazing rider, and he's fantastic, and he's been up there at fantastic races this season. But I've never seen a man with so much talent look so unfussed. And he just did not look like he was bothered.
I mean, that was a proper CBA, wasn't it? It really was. I can't be bothered.
Yeah, it was.
You can see, though, I mean, it's the end of a long, long season. I mean, I saw some things the other day, and you looked at the amount of days that Ellen Van Looy, who's the most raced female rider, has ridden, and you just look at it and you think, that is a astounding performance. I think it was 44 days, if I remember correctly. I haven't got the figures in front of me. And you just thought, that's a seriously silly amount of racing at top-level sport. And the amount of damage you must do to your body and the quality of your recovery to be able to race in, you know, week in, week out, day in, day out, it is astounding. Absolutely astounding. And hats off to anybody who's racing at the end of this season, because let's face it, in the UK, we all packed up at the end of Nationals and there's been like a couple of local races.
Yeah, we speak about Ellen Van Looy. I've seen her race a lot over the Christmas period, and she just kind of rides it. She doesn't look like she's going particularly into the red. She kind of finishes the race, but she's up there all the time. You know, the people who are around her are absolutely burying themselves. I'm sure she is as well inside, but she's got that poker face of just looking like it's all under control. And you've got to remember, she's not the youngest out there by a long way.
No, I mean, yeah. She could be riding the vet category now.
That's right, absolutely.
I think it's interesting that when you look at the older riders, so you've got the Van Looys, the Nashes, the Comptons, they are the riders who are absolutely nailing it all the way through. And even Eva Lechner now at 35 is relatively old when we're talking about riders in, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, you know. So people like Anna Kate, I mean, she's still only 21, and yet it feels like she's been around racing on the scene for a long time, really.
The next race in the calendar after Lille was Hoogstraten, and that was won in all categories by Storm Kira, who managed to blow out, you know, and a good decision, I think. You know, if you bear in mind what happened at one of the other races recently where a tree came down literally 15 minutes before the start of the women's race or the scheduled start of it, you'd think, yeah, it focuses the mind a bit. So I think a good choice there. I don't think there's anything wrong with cancelling that race. But we did have that final round of the Super Prestige coming from Middelkerk. And again, Céline Dalcarmenau Friday finished ahead of everyone else, finished ahead of Bettsma and Verst, sprinting into third place. Sveik took the win ahead of Ertz and Isabit, with Lars van der Haar in fourth with a little fist pump as he came over the line, because that meant that, well, Sveik took the series ahead of Isabit. Lars van der Haar managed to pull in a podium overall, coming in third place. Alvarado won the overall ahead of Castellain and Verst. So Alvarado, she's won a lot this year, hasn't she? She won the DVV, she's won the Super Prestige, she won the World Champs, and she could have won the World Cup if it wasn't for a slight loss of grip with 100 metres to go. So, yeah.
Yeah, or a tactical mistake on her part through the race. But, yeah, you can't take anything away. If you said to any rider, any cross rider, this is what you're going to win at the end of the season, they would think you're having a laugh. They really would, wouldn't they? It is just astounding. I don't think in some ways, she can believe it. And it is absolutely brilliant to see somebody who has come on steadily. She's improved over the last few years. This year, really, as you say, Neil, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's confidence. She's got the confidence, and that winning means that she's winning. And when she hasn't won, she's turned around and she's worked on that. So to be able to go from not sprinting to being able to take that sprint, doing that bit of work, get that confidence, absolutely astounding.
And let's not forget that in this race, she decided, just to give everyone else a little bit more of a chance, she had changed shoes halfway through, with another broken shoe and a shoe change. Even so, it's very, very similar to Quinton Hermans in the previous week, where it pushed her way back down the field, and she didn't let that get to her and chase back and ended up having a great result.
Yeah, I'd say it once, I'll say it again. It's never going to win me any friends at Boa. What's going on, guys? Absolutely. We never used to have shoes in the pits. We're even seeing local league races where you have shoes in the pits. I was talking to the Barnes brothers at the West Midlands dinner I was hosting, and they now include shoes in their pit kit. This is a regional and national level. Come on, I know we should be pushing the envelope of technology, and I'm sure Bruce is going to kill me for being Mr. Non-Corporate here. However, I'm not after Boa sponsorship because, to be honest, I wouldn't have a pair given.
Well, they used to be a client of mine, so I can't comment on anything, really.
Bruce, keep quiet. We'll edit it out.
No, I mean, it's a really interesting point. And not to counter that, but just to pose another point, which was Velcro worked well, but when it gets wet, then it's, doesn't work that well. And if you get things on there, I guess the difficulty is who manufacturers want to provide stiffer and tighter fitting. And, when a system works well, it works really well. The problem is when riders bash it or have problems with getting it, when there's lots and lots of mud in there, that's where it seems to be having problems. But I mean, not that this is anything, because I've changed the relation. We don't have that same relationship with them anymore, but I did hear rumours that they might be looking into a new, more resistant system, but I kind of...
Yeah, I don't want to tread onto Neil's professional toes here, but in terms of fitness for purpose of a functional bit of kit, if you look at the Ratchets and some of the other brands, if you look at that design, a combination of that and some kind of closure system that is laced or... is based on some kind of cord, as well as a more robust ratchet. Yeah, great. But to have races won and lost, I'm not going to be in a position I'm ever going to win a race or lose a race because of a ratchet. But some of these riders are putting their careers on the line, and their races and their destinies are being altered because something that is designed to hold a shoe together in muddy and wet conditions gets broken.
Yeah, and this is a classic example of I'm sure that they've got a test, and they will test it in a particular way. And if you yanked on that Boa cable in the direction that the forces normally come, I'm sure it'll be incredibly strong, and the ratchet will be absolutely amazing. But it doesn't pass the here with a rot test. And it's those unpredictable things. It's that type of robustness which is another part of a testing protocol you've got to have. And it is that buyer beware if you believe too much of the hype, whether it's aerodynamic efficiency in a wind tunnel or whatever. On the test, the manufacturers, I don't think they tell lies in these things. In the test, it will be true, but that if that's actually the most important thing for you is another matter. Anyway, as you say, we're kind of going right into the day job rather than the crosscast.
There's going to be a big nerd alert flash going across the screen.
But speaking about nerd alert, what do you reckon about Mathematician of the Year? Don't you think Lars van der Haar's mental arithmetic must be absolutely amazing? Because you saw how happy he was as he came over the line. It was quite a complicated set of results, Ertz needed to be in a certain position. Lars needs to be in a certain position. He certainly seemed to realise that he managed to pull it off because he managed to celebrate as he came over the line.
I know, but you've got to remember that he's got Sven at the side of the track who is going to have calculated that to the nth degree. And if he hadn't, I bet Lucy probably was stood at the side of the track working it out very carefully for the next time he came round. I thought he had an absolutely solid season. He had a proper Lars van der Haar season where he was knocking on the door, but maybe just like that, a little bit more to take win after win after win. And he put in a great ride. I mean, Lawrence Fee, I'm not going to spend too much time on it because I'm sure Neil can probably express more clearly just how good Fee was, but it was really good. It was nice to see him take a well-deserved win.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was nice to see that win. He finished it off in style. And you look at his season, what's he come away with? He's had a lot of really good racing. And he's come away with the Belgian national title. And he's come away with the Super Prestige, arguably the series, which is more important. Apart from the World Cup, it's the more important series, more important than the DVV, the way I should have phrased that. So he's come away with a really strong season. He's clearly been able to hold things together. He's got his beer at the finish line, and as my son Finn was saying, he was next to him at one point at the start on that race. He said, he messaged me straight away afterwards and said, "Sveik's calves, I think they're as wide as my head." He said, his muscle form is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's definitely, he's not exactly Mr. Lightweight, is he? Don't get me wrong, the TV screen isn't kind to anybody. And when you go down to the races, if you've not been lucky enough to go out to the races and actually get up close to these riders, if you think of the biggest rider you can think of, the most solid looking one, you'll go down there and go, "Oh, they're about half as big as I thought they really were," because all these riders are super, super lean. But yeah, Lars Fink's calves, they probably have their own gravitational field. They're something else again. Bruce can only dream of calves like that.
I was going to say, I couldn't possibly compare, really. I'm not in that same sphere. I can hopefully emulate Sveik's ability to match his kit with his bikes, but other than that, I think I'm going to struggle, really.
The other significant thing that happened in that race was we saw Pidcock attacking really hard, and shall we say, halfway through the race, he kind of lost his mojo. Depending on which movies you watched in 20 years ago, he had that mini crash, getting the air and landing on the top tube. And as we hear, it was a near miss, but yeah.
Yes, we've not had to interview Tom this week, which is probably a good thing because it'd be a bit like interviewing Mickey Mouse, I think, somehow. He's on holiday now and taking a break and probably using some of that snow and ice on the skiing holiday for other purposes. And he's probably a little bit tender in places, but it was. To be honest, after that lad on the top tube, I was quite impressed that he finished the race at all. Never mind, got a sixth place. That was it's still some riding, but I think you probably be fair to say he's ready for a break. He's on holiday now and well deserved. And it's really interesting. You get to this time of year and suddenly the Twitter feeds and the Instagram feeds and all the social media is full of riders on holiday. It's not actually of people out and racing into the last races.
Did you see, though, that whilst people have been going on holiday, they've been advised for the riders who are transferring on and racing other forms of cycling in the summertime to go to altitude? So part of the reason why Van der Poel was reputed to go skiing straight after the Worlds is because he could stay at 1,900 metres altitude before the Volta Algarve. So, it's good to keep that adaptation phase. Sleep high, train low.
Maybe he's passed that tip on to Tom whilst he's been playing Fortnite with him and he's a bit of downtime. You never know. I getting into the end of the season, it's sort of looking back onto it, and I think it also shows we idolise these riders, but riders make mistakes on the way through. Riders make mistakes. Very interesting discussion around Denise Bessemer and whether commentators should call it or not. I know a good friend of mine, Marty, has had a lot of flack for his... somebody called it a rant about Denise Bessemer. Personally, I think he's totally entitled to it. I think the penalties are so tight, and having had a chance to reflect on our conversation about it previously, I think that it is way light. You're responsible for what you put in your body as an athlete. And if you want to keep people watching that sport, I'll be the first to say I switched off the last race where we had a race where the winner, real winner, really was the rider in second place and third place and fourth place. And the person who came across the line first shouldn't be racing.
Yeah. And, that simple. And I think if you see the way that the other riders on the podium were looking at that race as well, it seems that it seems to be a quite commonly held opinion.
But yeah.
So it's been really interesting as well that we spotted the news that whilst Betsim has been allowed to return to racing without testing and various other things, we see Manon Bakker fired from Experza for riding with the wrong wheels and tyres. And, professionalism in the sport is very important to keep sponsors involved. And, if you've spent 25 grand at trade supplying a cross team with wheels, you're going to be pretty miffed if at the world champs they turn up on a rival brand's wheels and then your tyre sponsor that's also given 50 grand's worth of tyres at trade see a different tyre brand's there represented nice and front and centre in a picture of you carrying your bike over an obstacle at the worlds. Yeah. It's totally understandable.
What was she thinking? There's nothing special about this. So she should understand. No, she's got those Miche wheels that she should be using, and she was seen there. I know she was in Switzerland, and she had DT Swiss wheels on. What were you thinking? And I've spoken to people so many times about even the most basic stuff of if you're doing your social media account and you're there sponsored by, and properly sponsored by one brand, and then you're there in the T-shirt from your old brand. Even at that level, you should be savvy enough, but
I think
it seems crazy, doesn't it? You would think, I think we've got a sport where we're wanting to push the boundaries upwards, where we're wanting better racing, better coverage. We want more support for the riders. The riders have a part to play in that, in being professional. And when you look at the amount of talent that is below waiting to come up, waiting for a chance to ride for a great team, when you've got the Van Anroy, so you've got the riders who are on the way up and through. I mean, Isabel Strasti has been out racing the whole season for the Edinburgh Road Club, a young rider putting it on the line out there. These riders could get more support, but it's taken by riders who then basically let the sport down. And I think that, for me, is a... we all make mistakes. Some are worse than others. However, people need to be very careful. They're in a position where they're getting a lot of support.
Even from a point of view of the sort of like management of your own bike. And I guess the difficult thing is we don't really know the undercurrent of what goes on at some teams versus others. The biggest teams, they do have mechanics that look after everyone across the, from a service course, some don't, But if you have six pairs of wheels and you've got three glued up, two glued up with muds, two glued up with intermediates and two glued up with Hiles, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say, well, maybe I'll take one pair of file treads off there and have a spare pair of muds for the world. It's likely to be muddy. It is Switzerland. It's the end of January. And I think, professionalism comes to your whole outfit, your pit crew as well, the whole outfit. And I guess that's the difficulty in this situation. Not really got a leg
and you
on.
Don't get away with it anymore.
No, you're right.
That's it. There's social media cams. There's people watching on YouTube. There's everyone watching and commentating. I mean, there's Neil watching on the cable cam, so we see everything. And
take it
right the way back to the beginning. You've got a cable cam which shows us every drop of sweat and every flex of Lauren Smeets' calf muscle as they come up those sprints. And I think, you can't get away from the fact that you've got to be up in front of people and you've got to present the right image. You know, if only because Neil gets all twitchy if his cable cams are wasted.
I mean, you've got a Sharpie, haven't you? And it's it doesn't really take a genius to realise that that's what half the road peloton do every single week. So, you know, just go around with a pen and just blitz all the logos off if it's that much of an issue. Anyway, let's digress and move on into something more positive and something slightly more professional.
Yeah. Hang on a minute. Let's finish off this with Neil's. He's been promising us this all the way through the season, and it would be remiss of us not to pull. If we can pull the rider who shall not be named up on their doping, Neil, top 7 camera shots, lucky 7. What were the lucky 7 for you? We're not going to ask you for 10. There's 7.
Yeah. Well. These are not the ones from this year necessarily, but these are my top camera shots. I've got to give you 8 actually, and because the in 7 and 8, these are the new camera shots in positions 7 and 8. I'll do a countdown.
Welcome to the moving up into 8. Come on, Neil, moving into 8.
In 8, we have got the start from Zonhoven this year with its new cable cam.
In 7,
finish of the worlds, the women's race with a fabulous cable cam shot.
Will it be a new mover in up to 6?
No, because the next 6 are all shots that are my favourite ones every year, and to me these are the ones that sum up watching Cross as a fan on the TV. In 6 is that 180 round the tree at Hoogerheide.
In 5,
it's the camber at Namur, where they come along, they do a 180 back, and it's that place where if you're unlucky, you put your foot through the wheel of somebody else.
What do we get to? Was that 5? I've lost track now.
We were just talking about professionalism.
I know, I'm far too interested in what Neil's actually saying to remember what number we're on.
I think it was 4.
What number we're on now, boys? 4!
Banking at Zolder. Again, another classic shot. You don't realise how much downhill that is at Zolder. And it's the shot that it makes it look easy. And then you see someone just pile it into the fence.
In 3.
Surely, the oopsie whoopsies at Lowenhout. Often copied, but none as good as the original.
In 2.
This is a bit of a subtle one. The woods at Hammer. You such a long shot and the riders come round and they're going up and down and round and it's a single camera shot. It could win an Oscar. It's such a good shot from a single on a single camera, but this time it's not good cinematography. It is actually just one shot.
And in Neil, I'm not a camera nerd, honest Mansfield's opinion, number 1 is...
the one and only, well, not the one and only anymore, the first and original cable cam at Heaton. The one that goes along the beach. Once you've seen that camera shot.
Love it. It might be the one that all the others are copied upon, but I don't think it's said it. I think it's been improved since. Tell you what, listeners, what you need to do, get onto Twitter, send us your top 3 camera shots. Don't send us 8, because Neil's already got enough bedtime reading that being nerdy, he's going to be looking at shoes next. But top 3 camera shots, send them in. Hashtag us out, put on at the Crosscast. I'm sure Bruce can think of a suitable hashtag for the cable cam gate.
there's so many things that you just don't want to have as the hashtag for searching for cams as well. So that's, we've got to be really careful on that.
I'm very professional, of course.
So obviously, part of my job is diligently making sure people don't say the wrong thing.
And on that note, let's move into the last ronde. So looking forward to next season then, we have the new National Trophy Series, which we know we've had them embargoed, and we've released this show the moment that the embargo is lifted. Now Matt's put a question to us, what would we like to see? But Matt, what would you like to see in the National Trophy?
Well, that's a bit difficult because I know what's coming up, unlike you two, who I haven't let in on the details of what's where. What would I like to see? Even bigger women's race fields, more competitive racing in the categories, less slog in a bog, more fast, wide racing. I'd like to see less mud this coming season than we've had in the 2020-2021 season than we've had in the 2020-2019 season, just simply because I want to see some quicker racing and I want to see lots more continental riders coming over. That will make me a happy bunny, to be honest, in the trophy series. So we've not told you, I've not told Bruce or Neil, they've no idea what's coming up in the racing. So first of all, the schedule will follow the timings that were at the national championships this year, which means that we're going to have our veteran men's and women's categories on the Saturday morning, the under 14s and under 16 categories in the Saturday afternoon, junior women, junior men, senior incorporated under 23 men's and women's races in the Sunday afternoon. Round number one is going to be on the 4th of October, so clashing with Waterloo, which I don't think is too much of an issue. That's going to be our friend Dave Haygarth, friend of Crosscast. Dave Haygarth's round up at Westmorland. So kicking off at Westmorland, come on guys, what's your thoughts on Westmorland?
Well, Westmorland in the dry potentially will be a ripper of a course. I mean, it will be a ripper in the sense of it will, you know, it will turn it from being a quite a sloggy venue. You know, it wasn't the fastest one in the world. I think it's a fair one to say. To if that is going to end up being like hill climb season on a cross bike because of those banks, that is going to be epic.
Yeah, and I think Dave is a craftsman. He's a master craftsman at cross, and yeah, he lives and breathes cross 12 months of the year, I think. And he, irrespective of what the weather conditions are, it will be a course which is challenging, and I think there'll be competition in it because he really knows how to get the most out of a venue, and it's a venue I think you could get a lot out of.
Yep, and talking to Dave today, just had a quick catch up with him to see if there were going to be some changes. Expect a different finish to where we were last time, so not necessarily finishing on the top of the hill. A lot more bringing it down, but lots of the key features are going to stay the same, including Bruce's favourite swimming pond.
I'm looking forward to it.
Just for you, Bruce.
Wicked. I mean, like...
just what you always wanted.
Yeah.
So North-West venue for round number one to kick us off.
So round number two, when is that?
Round number two, 24th and 25th of October, which means it jumps over and past Dublin. So you can all go to Dublin, watch the World Cup, drink plenty of Guinness, and come back in time for the round, which is going to be at Derby. So back to Moorways once again. Glad to see John Holmes and the Impella squad down there. But it clashes with Zonhoven. Same date as Zonhoven. So one of my favourite races at Zonhoven clashes with one of my favourites and most local national trophies, which is Derby. Thoughts on Derby? It's been around for a long time now. Did they get it right last season?
I think they get it right every season, more or less, because I think it's a great venue. You know, and it changes from year to year. You know, some years it flows better than other years, but you know, they try different things every time. So you never quite know what they're going to get. Last year they had the grave for the non-UCI races that you could bunny hop across or lie in if you got it wrong. It turned out they couldn't have that in the UCI race. And they do different things. I've raced at Derby lots of times, and it's a course that I always enjoy racing at. To me, it's a classic in my book. What do you think, Bruce?
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think they seem to sort of be one of those. It seems to be a course which has that natural amphitheatre, as we know, around the running track. I mean, like every course this, you know, going forwards, the perennial problem with Derby as a location is just the parking. But you know, if anyone wants to be a parking sponsor going forwards, like, you know, you just need to put in a small, you know, kilometre by kilometre flat surface for any venue to use. That'd be great.
I think Tarmac are maybe a little bit more occupied elsewhere, yeah. But it's a lot of space in prime location you're after there, Bruce. Not so much a problem for some, but it was for a number of riders at our next venue, because our next venue is going to be on the 7th and 8th of November down at Cyclo Park in Gravesend. So heading down south, steadily working our way diagonally down and right across the country as you look on the map, from Westmorland to Derby to Cyclo Park, former national championship venue as well as national trophy venue. Fast, quick, is it a proper cross course?
It made a very good national champs, arguably. I think it's it will be interesting to see if we get a wet one there, because, you know, we there was much talk about this. Oh, will we get a, what's it going to be like in the mud? You know, it was quite polished off in those early veteran races for the national champs. I don't know. You know, Neil, you dealt with the slip and slide of Gravesend more than I did, because it was pretty dry by the time I was racing. So, I mean, what do you think it'll be like?
I didn't race the national champs the year it was at Gravesend, because we were doing Crosscast Live at that year. In answer to Matt's question, you know, is it a proper cross course? I think, well, yes, definitely, because cross courses are diverse and we embrace diversity in cross. you could say, is any cross course a cross course? You know, does a cross course have to be the same? You know, it's not like at the track where, even, you know, speak to a track rider and they'll tell you, well, this course, this track is quicker than that track, and this track is smoother than that track, and, you know, but cross is about different conditions, different races, and if you want to see the same technical hurl yourself down rocky stuff, well, why don't you watch downhilling? You know, if you want to watch smooth going around in ovals, why don't you watch the track? You know, cross has got elements of all of those things, and yeah, definitely in my book.
Yeah, I must admit, it's kind of me playing devil's advocate there, because I actually think it's one of my favourite courses. It says to me, you don't need acres of mud to make a fast race and make a exciting race. And I think with Hugh Williams being there, Hugh is one of the great architects of cross courses. He's one of those people who comes up with lots of different ideas with a view to making it great racing for all abilities. So going to be interesting to see what Hugh comes up with.
Yeah, I remember speaking to Hugh the year they were designing that course, and he said he was, I think he was talking to the UCI on a UCI design course or something. And he said the thing he took away from that was, you look at your venue and you totally ignore everything that's there, and you think, where would be the ideal place? Do I need to take down a fence? You know, do I need to go over that into that football pitch like we had at Shrewsbury this year? You know, do we need to completely change that venue to make it into something that will be absolutely cracking course? And that's what he did. And we ended up with a course which was a great, it was great the first time there was the trophy there. And it was even better when it was the national champs.
Yeah, okay. Definite improvement on what is now quickly becoming an established venue. But we go to a brand new venue for round number four, because round number four is going to be on the 21st and 22nd of November. And that is going to be at Taunton, down in an equestrian centre. So brand new venue for those people with a long memory. I'm not sure if Bruce and Neil can remember. The last time we headed similar area, we were down at Bicton. Down at another equestrian centre, in fact, for a national trophy. That's a long time ago, though.
Wasn't the Southwest Regional Champs there this year?
It was indeed. Good spot, Neil. 10 out of 10 for your nerd alert there, definitely. That's, you know, it was indeed. And it is a variation on that course. I've had one previous event. I've spoken to a couple of people who were there as race officials as well as riders. But more importantly, had a chat with Mark Deakin, the event organiser. So let's hear what Mark has to say and see what he can tell us about the brand new round of the National Trophy. So special in the pits, and we are going to be looking forward to the brand spanking and shiny new round, or maybe muddy round, of the National Trophy for next season. And we're speaking to the organiser, it's Mark Deakin. Mark, how are you?
Yeah, very good. Yourself?
I'm good. Whereabouts are you at the moment?
In Bristol, in a cafe.
So not down on site in Taunton. Give us an idea of what people can expect when they come down.
So we are pretty much, we're on the edge of the Quantock Hills, which is a really good mountain biking area. Quite a few people from the Midlands come down for the weekend to use the Quantocks and mountain biking. We're not far from Exmoor. We're not far from the North Somerset coast and the North Devon coast. Because we're literally just off the M5, we're less than an hour from Bristol. So we are pretty easy to get to. Fair bit near the south coast as well. So we're probably an hour in all sorts of directions to various beaches and coastlines. The new venue has only been used once within the South West League. So it'll be a challenging course and a challenging event to run at. Pontus Hall is an equestrian centre, so they're used to holding pretty big events there. But obviously for the four-legged variety of animals. So. We have run the event there, South West Champs, back in December. The venue is almost in a bowl, so we've got one loop up over the hill, quite a bit of grass and gravel. No tarmac, unfortunately, and plenty of mud at the bottom end near the stream. So, it's a good variety. The previous course was a bit of a power course, so we're just tweaking it to put some more technical bits in for the higher calibre riders of the National Trophy Tours.
When you say lots of gravel, what sort of proportion of the course do you think is going to end up gravel?
I'd probably say, 6 to 8. It just depends how we manipulate the course, because the landowner's making a few developments over the summer, so he's having to put a bit more hardcore in, because down in Somerset we get a fair bit of rain and we're fairly low-lying, so he's just trying to make the land a bit more usable for all those people and the vehicles that are going to come on site.
Got a bowl, so that sounds like good viewing for spectators?
So we've got a few of the horse jumps are quite elevated, like tabletops. So there are areas where the riders will be riding around on the edge of the tabletops, and hopefully the spectators will barely lose at least two of those. There's really good viewing points. In fact, one of them you can pretty much see the whole course from. So we'll try and make that a central viewing point if we can.
And then in terms of the hill and the ascent, how much height gain are we talking about?
I guess it's probably 10-20 metres, but it's quite gradual on the way up. And then you basically drop off quite sharply on the other side and come back again. So you go up through a lot of copse trees, around a few horse jumps, a bit of a bowl, and then come back down the hill. In fact, that part of the course is probably the far side of the hill. It's probably the muddiest section. And that's where I think we're going to tweak the course, make it a little bit more difficult. It was a little bit too easy last time.
You've got a copse of trees that we're going through as well. Does that mean there's much leaf litter?
Yeah, no, it's pretty well looked after. So, most of the mulch is taken up. They like to keep the grass fairly good for the horses, although they obviously churn it up a fair bit. But because we're going to be off-season from the horse season, the ground should be fairly level. Hopefully we'll get it rolled in places, so it should make quite a good riding surface.
What's probably the most technical feature?
I probably think the top of the course, where we've got the various sort of bomb holes, sort of bowl areas, where we're going to, I think we make it difficult with the mud and the gravel as you transition from the mud into the gravel and tight turns off camber. So I think that'll be the hardest section if we get the course set right, which hopefully we will. We've got quite a few guys who ride at National Trophy level, so we're going to use their guide and girls, use their experience to help develop the course over the summer.
Practical stuff, pits.
So hopefully we have quite a large area for the pit, and we should be able to put a water container in place, if not run a hose out to that area. But there is a stream right next to it, so if the water table's high, we should be able to take water direct from the stream if required as well. So we've got a few options. We'll see how the weather goes and bring in what's required.
In terms of takeaways, if people have to practice one skill?
I think a lot of it will be transition from the mud across to the gravel. So I think it'd be a difficult tyre choice, I guess. Because if it gets really, really wet, the bottom end is going to be quite muddy. But then you're going to be going across quite hard ground with some very fine or some fairly rough gravel. It'd be an interesting tyre choice, I think.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be really interesting. It sounds like you're going to have a busy summer enjoying getting the course styled and getting ready for First National Trophy down there for a little while.
Yeah. We'll certainly put a bit of work in and hopefully have a pretty good event.
Sounds good. Looking forward to coming down and seeing the course and watching how the racing unfolds. So down here in the pits, thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you. Cheers, Mark.
So thanks, Mark, for getting us up to speed on a venue that probably very few of us have raced that if we're not local to the area. Although I think those who are going to be doing the mountain bike scene over the summer will be travelling down to that bit of the world several times, and it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to going into that type of space. But let's talk about the next round. Where are we going? Round five.
On to the next round, going back up north again. So we've had a couple of rounds down south, and it is going to be a final round with only five rounds in the series on the 12th and 13th of December at York. So we go back to York. We go back to arguably the longest camber, continuous camber in cross. But we get five rather than six rounds this year.
Okay, let's talk venue first.
What the listeners can't see is Neil and Bruce's face at the moment. Bruce is looking like, did he really just say that? What? And Neil is looking exceedingly perplexed. I think there's the eyebrows for both, though, have been doing overtime. That's for
sure.
Well,
I mean...
So venue yeah. first, Bruce. York.
York makes for a battle. I'd like to race York when I wasn't the last person on the course, because, you know, I think that it's one of those ones.
You were poorly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those courses which I totally understand its sort of place in the calendar, and I understand that how the venue works, etc., etc. But guy, if it was anything like this year, it would be an absolute slog.
It made a very interesting finale with the record entry for a last round of a trophy with 615 riders in the preceding season, and it's the last round again. But Neil, what's your thoughts?
Dare I say I don't like York. That would be my least favourite round out of any of those. And I'm not saying it's a bad venue. It's just I don't enjoy racing there as much as some of the others. I've never gone well there. And because it's all of the things that I'm not so competitive on. You know, I like a faster course. I like it when the top's a bit slippery rather than the whole thing is a total slog. But I know other riders, they excel in those types of conditions. So, I'm not saying it's a bad venue because I know a lot of people love it. I've got unfinished business there, and I still didn't finish that business last year. I was a lot better last year than the year before, but for various reasons, they've not been my favourite races.
More skills and drills for you then. Summer.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, we potentially. Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. I certainly could have done more skills and drills last season. There's no question about that. I'll hold my hands up on that one. However, I think that it's a venue where it does stir things up a bit. So if you're someone like Hattie Harnden, you can be minutes ahead in a muddy York, and potentially not minutes ahead at a well-drying Taunton the previous week or a couple of weeks beforehand. You know, I think it could mix it up.
Imagine a scenario where we saw the National Trophy run like the DVV on time. Be a really interesting one, wouldn't it?
definitely. And come on then, five rounds, not six. Is that going to really shake it up?
Yeah, it is. It's going to really shake it up.
I presume you won't drop a round.
Don't know that yet. I suspect you will drop a round.
I mean, it's an interesting one because the implications of a rider in the UK framing their season, if you've got five rounds, it doesn't sort of have the same glue that maybe it when it had. I mean, I remember it wasn't that long ago when we had seven with a race after the national champs, and was it seven?
No, I think it was six when we had a round after the national champs.
Exactly?
It's certainly in probably the last decade.
Maybe I'm just showing my age then, or being completely paying any attention. But I don't know. I guess it's, if you think about it, I guess maybe for riders who are riding really well and they are making the choice between doing Derby and Zonhoven, what would you do? Because, you know, if you're going to go and ride a big one.
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, the dates is an interesting one for me. That's I know the dates are the dates, and you can't do one set of dates based on another one. But yeah, if you look at Westmoreland, is same date as Waterloo. Derby is same as Zonhoven. Gravesend, probably the same as Coppenburg Cross.
No,
I guess.
In fact, it could well be, yeah. And then you've got Taunton clashing with Coxside. York clashing with Antwerp.
That's right.
But remember, these are World Cups, so you don't have a mass exodus to go ride the World Cup events. But you will lose spectators.
That's probably the case. Yep. But you look at who goes to the World Cups. You look at them this year, and there were riders, particularly in the junior category, who were deciding or having to decide, are they going to go and ride the World Cup for Great Britain? Great honour for them, and that's a dream for many of them. Or do they decide to try to go for the national trophy? I think it's a really tough call for them.
15, if you think it's 14, 15 races in the World Cup, you're always going to get clashes. And one thing we did see was when the trophies clashed this year with the World Cup, we saw a lot more continental riders come over. So we had Thies Aerts riding because he couldn't get into the World Cup. And Thies subsequently has gone on to take podiums and beat up 10 rider, I would argue, in terms of continental races. So there are some winners and some losers. And yeah, I think the top few are going to be penalised, those people with a chance of qualification for a World Cup. Do I think it's going to affect it overall, having 5 out of 6 instead of 6? I'm not sure. We may see higher participation because you don't have to drive the length and breadth of the country 6 times. You only need to do it 5.
Yeah, but if you look at the one which is the closest to the continent, 7th of November at Gravesend, that's the one week when there isn't a World Cup. So all those continental riders, they won't have any problem in finding races that weekend that are closer to home.
Indeed, very tricky, very tricky. I'm glad I wasn't trying to put the calendars together. That was my take home look at it. When you look at it compared to what weekends is left free after a World Cup, there's not that many. Bear in mind that you're going to put Super Prestige in there, and you're going to put DVV in there, you're going to put the rest in.
And Matt, I've got a question. Where's the sand then? No, we've got no Irvine. And we've got no Pembrey. You know, I thought we were moving to a sand-based series in the UK.
Well, remember, we've still got the national championships to come.
Oh, fair enough.
So we've still got national championships to come. So let's do that first, and then I can answer your question after that. National champs, date set by the UCI, of course, on the 9th and 10th of January 2021 at Ardingly. So back down south again. So out of our rounds, we have Ardingly taking the national champ slot. A quick heads up will be that there are going to be some big changes at Ardingly, shrinking the amount of course out on the fields, extending potentially up and over the boundary fence into the main arena areas and the main showground areas into the tarmac with a double bridge, potentially coming up and over to shrink it down, and with a more killer, less filler, basically being the plan. Dougie, I spoke to today, very, very excited about it. Culmination of basically what they've been planning for the last 3 years, taking on board a lot of comments from lots of people who've been riding as well as officials. So it sounds like even bigger and better at Ardingly. I think a just reward for putting on 2 very good national trophy rounds.
Yeah, I agree. And, Ardingly is the Crawley round. You know, one of those places that's got more than one name. So, yeah, the down south of London.
I think it's interesting. I mean, going back to the whole thing, I've always talked about venues and, different things. But, it has it all in terms of physical infrastructure in there to hold a major event. And often we can talk about the course and it's amazing or it's not amazing, but sometimes it, it can be the fact that everyone can get the water down there and that everyone can get in and spectate relatively easy, and there's parking and there's toilets. And actually, Showgrounds make a really good location. If you wanted to put a cable cam in there, there'll be a load of electrics to be able to, you know, rig up your TV and do it. And but that's a real part of the sport growing.
Yeah, I agree. And there's often there's water, you know, water pipes and things like that. But I was going to say earlier, actually, with the new round in Taunton, you know, this is becoming the norm now, isn't it? It's Showgrounds and it's eventing venues which are looking for things to do in the winter, and people that have got they understand how the ground recovers after events.
Yeah, and are capable of holding the volume of riders that a national trophy is now, which is of a scale we may not get 25,000 spectators like you could get at a continental race, but we have far more in terms of competitor numbers, which means that we have a heck of a lot of camper vans to squeeze in, lots and lots of pit crew, etc., to come in there. But it does mean, as Neil said, no sand.
Yeah, but if you look at all of those courses, I mean, I don't know Taunton, because I've not raced there. I know where it is. Each of those courses is a cracker. They are all really good racers' courses, so you can go and enjoy them as a racer. You know, I've heard a criticism. You know, pointing at the world champs, but of the way that venues are now being. The number one thing is parking, and then the number two thing is sponsors. And you know, it's a long way down before you actually get to how good the course is. And these, I think, they are all cracking places to race.
And I think there's a big variation there in terms of the courses. So you've got a very big hilly Westmorland, you've got Derby, which is tight and twisty, you've got Cyclopark based on sort of a chalky, very quick area, you've got Taunton, which is going to be grass and gravel, you've got York, which we know is going to be a more traditional Yorkshire slog in the bog, you've got Ardingly, which is promising to be quicker, faster, and a real culmination of it. And I think we shouldn't forget, we've not got Irvine and Pembrey, the two that you mentioned there, Neil, and you've got two very interesting venues. You've got Irvine, which is a brilliant venue, a great team, but it has the downside that it is very tight in terms of time for the daylight hours, just because of how far north it is. And you've also got Pembrey, which of course is a great venue and a great prospective venue, but it's a fair trek over. Potentially, I think, of all the rounds, it was the one that you could see was going to need to step up again, given the competition of the other rounds that are here.
Yeah, I think that variance is there. And I think it's also, you know, the bit that I was sort of, you know, jumping on there about your point of people's comments about the World Champs being, you know, around parking and infrastructure and then courses kind of last. And to be honest, we can talk as the sort of, and I want to use this politely, the nerds talking about the nitty-gritty of the racing until the cows come home. But if it costs you €260,000 to run an event minimum or whatever you'd suggest as the running budget for a Flanders Classics type run event, it doesn't really matter what the course may well look like, as long as it physically has the infrastructure in place to be able to hold the capacity of the course. And if you can then make sure that that's backed up by sponsors being able to make sure that they have their pontoon in a river or that they have a VIP tent on the finish line, then it pays for the racing and it makes it sustainable so that we can have a sustainable sponsorship and sustainable professional racing series. And that's, you know, a difficult part of the sport we have to mesh together.
But this year, we're going around the regions in England, but there's nothing in Scotland, nothing in Wales. We've not been over to Northern Ireland for a long time. But
no, well, if you look at it, the furthest around north is Westmorland. You're then at York, and Derby is in the Midlands. Everything else is basically on that southern strip of the country, running across from Gravesend through past Ardingly down to Taunton. So in terms of distances to travel, this is, if you're a southern rider based somewhere down in the south of the country, this season, including the Nationals, is probably your chance to really race at it with it being close by. So if you haven't taken the opportunity to race it, now's the time to do it. The downside, the flip side of that, is if you're based in Scotland, outside of the box drawn by those venues, you've got a long old track down every time there's a national trophy. And will we see maybe not quite so much of a domination by some of the Scottish riders, because when they do come down, they are always very, very strong. And we're going to see less participation from Scotland. Will we see an increase in Southern riders actually riding the trophy? Because it's the most Southern-centric one we've seen for a long time.
And which is all, and it's also being reflected on some of the other racing this year, looking forward into the summer with the mountain bike series, where there's more of that down in the southwest this year.
Yeah, so clearly you have they've been breeding race organisers and venues and opportunities to race for sure. definitely. I think it's very interesting. What will be interesting to see is what effect having the loss of HSBC as a major sponsor, that's literally announced a few hours before we've recorded the show, what effect will that have on race organisers, on riders, and on the exposure? We've seen the loss already on the road of TV coverage, something we've not had in the cross. Are we going to see it as a bad thing, or is it going to be a positive thing because of the opportunities now that are available?
Come on, Bruce. I mean, I don't know what will... It will be really interesting to see how the commercial rights arrangements now lie with partner events, because don't forget that all of the organisers that run the national trophies partner with BC to host a specific round, and they have to fulfil certain criteria. But beyond that, is there any reason why you couldn't look for title sponsorship for your rounds, or how will that be arranged? Now, you would imagine that the bods at BC are grappling with the task of looking for a commercial partner to help them run their programmes as they are, but I'd imagine that, you know, grassroots racing is rather low on their priorities and it might go off. Now, you might argue that the loss of funding means that we won't be able to see riders supported in the same way. That said, individual events might actually get better value because they can offer quite clear sponsorship rather than seeing HSBC plastered on top of everything. So it'll be an interesting scene in the commercial scope to see where it goes.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting whether we're going to see a Four Seasons collective sponsored derby, for example. You know, you can put your company right over the top of it if it's not that title sponsorship is not owned. And in the past, we used to see that up until HSBC's coming in as a sponsor. Now, the deal was definitely different from Sky to HSBC, and what that is moving forward, I think, Bruce, you make a really good point. Where's that going to lay and how much is going to be in there? Is this the opportunity for lots of financial firms that didn't get involved? And, you know, if you imagine if you worked for the Neil Mansfield Leicestershire branch of banking, or the Mansfield Bank, you would not be involved because you couldn't sponsor it. Now you can. So there is that opportunity to pull in maybe somewhere from outside. How it affects the actual sponsorship of the team, I don't know.
Matt, believe me, the Mansfields of Leicestershire Bank has been supporting the National Trophy Series for a long time.
I think your entry fees alone, Neil, must run into nearly four figures, certainly, commitment for a national trophy. I dread to think how much it is. So just think there's one round less this year.
Just looking at the riders that we've mentioned, you know, from the continent, these international riders, ones we normally focus on, you know, what have we got coming up before we're back into the next cross season? Of course, the big one is the Olympics coming up over the summer. And I think we could see many of the riders in various forms, various events at the Olympics.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see. There's a lot of people that we see at cross now looking at what they're going to do at the Olympics. I mean, the interview with Tom Pickock, don't forget you can download that. That was on the last show. That's still available. Tom talks about riding World Cups and looking for a slot at the Olympics, looking to see if he can go race. You've got Matthew van der Poel, of course, who... Is he favourite for every title? He could well be, couldn't he? And domestically, we've got some very strong riders, not least of which, of course, Evie Richards.
Yeah, I was at the British Cycling Awards dinner a few weeks ago, and Evie was up on the stage, and one of the things that, I mean, to her absolute credit, Evie, she's wears her heart on her sleeve sometimes. She was so open. And she said, look, the reality is we've only got one place. And she said, I'd be lying if I said I didn't want to go to the Olympics and race on the mountain bike. Yeah, and that is going to dictate whether she what her season's going to look like. And I thought, you know, respect to you, Evie. You know, of course, there, you know, you and Annie last. It's probably between the two of you as to who's going to get that slot, and who wouldn't want the slot. But she's, you know, potentially Evie could be there. In fact, we saw her take a win last weekend with Annie also on the podium in the mountain biking. So between the two of them, we could see them, and then others who are. Yeah, Eva Lechner, who we've mentioned before, you know, before on the show today, you know, so many of the riders who could be out there racing over the summer, and of course that's going to affect what their form's going to be like when they come into the cross season next year.
Yeah, definitely. And don't forget, of course, we've got the road season. We've already seen Matthew van der Poel in action in some of the early season road races. You're seeing, no doubt, Wout van Aert going back to put some of the ghosts down that are there, some of the demons from the Tour de France. I think we've got some very good riders. And I think we reflected on it at the end of last season, that riders who want to do well now are realising that cross is the way to go. And that's certainly reflected in the crossover between cyclocross and other disciplines in the UK. And I think if you're looking at what you're going to race, whether that's going to be like Tom Amin raced in some of the elite crits that I'm looking forward to seeing. I mean, he put in a phenomenal ride in Newcastle. Whether it's riders like Anna Kay, who we've seen in things like the Cyclone up in the northeast, whether it's people like Evie riding on the mountain bike. Anna's talking about doing some of the mountain bike series as well. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch and see what they do to keep that form and how much of the cross season they do. When are they going to come in? Because Waterloo, 4th of October, it's a big trip to the States for one round.
Yeah. So between now and the start of the cross season next year, if you're wanting to keep up with what's going on in the world of road cycling, then do subscribe to the Velocast. We actually span out of the Velocast several years ago. Velocast with Scott and John, mostly. They're a podcast, similar type of feel in many respects to what we do. We're kind of commenting on the races, particularly when it gets to those biggest races. They've got incredible knowledge. So, you know, we'll point you towards the Velocast. They've got some free content, which you could download now, early season, and then when it gets into the tours, they have a daily show, and that's behind a paywall. So, you know, do go subscribe, try it out, pay every month and see how you get on with it. You know, we're really grateful to them for giving us that leg up right at the beginning. So I think with that, it's the end of the season. We are planning on being back in September with season number 4. Thanks so much to all of the guests we've had in the pits and on the ground this year, and thanks to those who have helped make the show happen by some of them being down there at the races, getting us on the ground content. And we have to say thank you to Steep, who provide us with our theme tune. We might pop up on the Facebook page from time to time over the summer, so do make sure that you subscribe. Also, so you don't miss us next season, don't forget to subscribe to us on your podcast app. You can find us on the internet. You can find me at Crosscast. Neil, Bruce, where can we find you?
You can find me at Bruce Dalton CX. And Matt, where can we find you?
As long as I don't fall off my bike too much, you can find me at Matt Fixer Pain on Twitter and on Facebook. And don't forget, of course, follow at the Crosscast on Twitter, where we'll be keeping you updated as when we're coming back. When we're going to be emerging ready for hopefully not quite such a muddy season next year.
Till next time then, we'll see you on the other side of the tape.
Bye.